For August the 27th, 2021, we talk about 12 Minutes, Hell Architect, and Jupiter Hell. Welcome to Level 383. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Dennis.
Yeah, glad to be back.
And now let me check and make sure that I'm right to focus on you. You were gone last week, right?
I was gone last week because I do not recognize the title from last week.
You do not. Yes. Yeah. Referring to... Yeah. David's Final Fantasy 14 character. Yeah,
it's honestly the only way I can, because like the numbers are all meaningless to me at this point. So it's was I there last week? And you know, I can't remember a week back. No one should be asked to do something crazy like that. So I go and look at the title. And usually it's so funny how like just a small string of words is infinitely more memorable or recognizable than any other aspect.
Yeah. Well, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Lots happening as we head into school. So I did kindergarten orientation with Milo, which, you know, he's technically going to be our second time around the block for having a kid in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. But because last year was fucked, he will kind of be our first time actually in person for kindergarten.
I suppose that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like I feel like I should know how everything works, yet I know how nothing works.
Right.
But, you know, they did...
BT Dubs, like, not to freak you out as a dad or anything, but doesn't it seem fucked up that they're doing, like, kindergarten and stuff in schools like that in person? Because it's like, those are the only people that haven't been vaccinated, like, or haven't had the option to do that.
Right? Yeah, and it, like, you know, our school is doing masks and everything. There is that side of it, also as having done, you know, kids at home for... a year and a half of the pandemic now, I get having them go back in person.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, there's the choices between just like, you know, what's best health-wise, what's best mental health-wise, and by the way, for everyone involved, and then just kind of where everyone's personal line of risk is, like, it truly is just impossible choices that everyone is being asked to make.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're all doing not the best really. We can.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. The choice is get your damn vaccines.
Well, I mean, well, there is that, but there's not that for people under 12.
The best time to plant a tree that will change all of the minds of people who are not getting the vaccine, you know, is 10 years ago. the next best time is now. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess, yeah, it's like the best we could do is kind of rethink the entire system we've got here, but that tree needed to be planted even earlier.
Yeah.
I guess some good news, I'm happy that people can start discriminating against people who are unvaccinated now, so since it's been approved by the FDA.
Wait, yeah. You weren't doing that already?
In an official capacity.
This was the first week that I've seen like a restaurant be like, you need proof of vaccination to be able to eat here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a bunch of stuff like that going up, so gives me hope.
Yeah.
Man, is it tiring to have talked about this for a year and not feel like there's at the end of the tunnel, but
no progress.
I mean, on the bright side, I feel much safer like walking about and stuff like that. Like I don't feel like I'm on lockdown anymore. So like for example,
don't live in Alabama.
That is true. Like, for example, like I got together with my coworkers on Friday last week and we had like lunch together outside. And that was like really lovely to be able to do that and not be like terrified since we were all vaccinated. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Nice.
But yeah. So for me, it's all getting set up for school. They had Milo do like the bus ride where they, you know, they get on the bus, they just drive around the block and come back. And you'd think he rode Jeff Bezos's rocket into space. He was so excited.
Did he have a cowboy hat?
No, yeah. But the bus was shaped like a dick, so I don't know.
That's weird.
Oh man. Yeah. I still remember the first bus ride that I took going to kindergarten. It was traumatizing.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Was it shaped like a dick?
No, no. I mean, bleak. No. No, it just it's one of those things where, you know, you as you become more attuned to your feelings, you become aware of like, oh, I've kind of always been like this. And you know, like, just my least favorite thing in the entire world was going to school, you know, like to the point where I would get like physically sick, like stomach sick, you know. And now I know, you know, as you know, with the benefit of being an adult and having a diagnosis, I can say, oh, that's anxiety. Like, yeah. But no, that was even the case. Like when I was in like kindergarten, it was rough. It was rough getting on that bus.
Yeah. It is amazing how nice it is to put a name to a thing. It's like, yeah. Does so much to help your understanding of something.
Yeah. You know, just kind of like, oh yeah, that super tight ball of nothing that you feel inside of you, that is pulling pulling all of you into it. Yeah, no, that's been with you since pretty much birth, and it's got a name. Yeah,
see, cool. We have very different approaches to these things.
Cool.
It's like, oh, I now know that there is no cure for this. Great.
I want to say one of your posts made me laugh heartily over the week when you said, I wonder if the people who knew me back in the day as off-putting an unpleasant person would be surprised to learn that I've actually gotten way worse.
Yeah, I did that on Facebook instead of Twitter because people on Facebook will have known me for back a while, but it's basically the same kind of shit post that I do on Twitter. I thought that would be a funny way to end that sentence was my entire thought process. Oh, God. What's up with you, man?
Oh, not much. I had a work week of sorts last week, but I got to squeeze in some games over the weekend. Cool. And I have a shorter week this week, which is nice. I'm going out of town visiting an old coworker this weekend, so I'm excited about that.
Nice. And
I think that'll be my last trip for a little bit. But yeah, and then I mentioned before, I got to eat with my coworker Fridays. That was really nice to like see some people. We have one of our coworkers has a white golden retriever and it's like 10 months right now, so I'm very excited at having an office dog again. Once they come back full time, we have two white golden retrievers named Duke on our floor. Oh,
that's
which is really, kind of odd.
That's really confusing. Yeah.
So maybe like dog names are kind of like human names, or there's like really popular ones that kind of come into fashion.
Yeah. At one point in my last office, we had three Joshes and four Chrises.
For humans or dogs?
Yeah, I was going to say, how many of those were dogs?
Humans.
Both were split right down the middle, funny enough. It was very awkward.
Nice. How about you, David? You're getting ready for Dragon Con, right?
Yep. So doing a ton of sewing in preparation for that. Also found out that they have different tracks for, you know, different types of fandoms, and one of them is like Asian culture and cinema, stuff like that. So lots of kung fu movies, lots of Godzilla, things like that. But apparently they didn't realize that one of the people that previously did a bunch of the shows isn't this time, isn't gonna be there. So they're like, literally last Sunday, we're like, oh, can you guys do like a martial arts performance?
Oh.
And so it's like a movie moment. Yeah, I guess we'll prepare and do that in like a week.
Huh.
But
yeah, a rush order on some choreography that could probably get a bunch of people hurt.
You know, as you do.
Yeah. Nice.
Oh. That'd be great. That'd be great if that were part of the show. Like, there's like a splash zone for people getting hurt from the demonstration.
Oh man! Please remember to buy our official tarps. Any tarp from outside of here will not work for what we're going to be throwing out there. Oh, nice. And I don't have too much happening over here. That's Dottie. Dottie's in an Amazon box. Messing with what appear. Yeah, no, those are definitely air bubbles.
Where are you sending her?
Abu Dhabi, figured to do the classic. Call me I'm not unoriginal. I'm just a traditionalist. No, no, I got it.
It was Timbuktu in the Aristocats.
That's, oh man. No, like the box has some like void fill in it, you know, like it's not bubble wrap, but it's the pockets of air, you know? Mm-hmm. So we're probably going to be treated to some of that popping here. Cause I am not going to be able to get her out of here. So,
and is the cat happy when it pops or terrified?
She hasn't popped one yet. I have just heard her crinkling. So we'll see if she can, if she can keep her claws in, keep her hook socks curled. Yeah. That's really all that's happening. I got an Amazon package and a cat that lives here, found her way into it. So.
For the first time in human history, a cat went into a box.
Yep. They're not unoriginal. They're traditionalists. So we've got the usual kind of show for you. We've got the grind, we've got the multiplayer, and then the end boss. Why don't we get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, you knew this was going to come. What have you been playing?
Man, I have played and beat Jupiter Hell, which I talked about the last time I was on.
Beat?
Yes, I beat it, and beat it in style. So you guys might remember one of the things that I really liked was just the crazy build combinations that you could get to.
Yeah.
One of my runs I had just a SMG that fired an insane amount every turn, and I wound up dual wielding that and everything. This time around, the run that won it for me, I found a knife, and it was their like equivalent of a legendary item, very rare. But it's called the Executioner. And when you pick it up, any enemy that you attack under 50% health will be instantly killed by it, regardless of how big their health pool is. It can be upgraded twice and just through like using it. The first time that goes from 50 to 90. And then the third time, it stops looking at percentage and it's just going to kill it unless it's a boss, essentially.
Okay.
Which is fantastic because it's like, all right, you know, no more percentage. This is just going to one shot literally everything. And drawbacks are the fact that it's a melee weapon. But you know what pairs great with a melee weapon is a skill that allows you to teleport behind enemies.
Oh.
And so rolling with a knife that one shots pretty much anything, and the ability to be, you know, in melee range at a moment's notice was really powerful.
Is the ability called Sorry Kid?
It's called Assassinate. But Sorry Kid would have worked. And honestly, like, it just felt fun because what happens is you do that first teleport that gets you into an entire group of enemies, and as long as they're standing close enough to each other, when you melee something, you move into its square. And so you just wind up mashing the attack button and like going through everyone's square, taking everyone out. And I had some other stuff that like ups the chance that you can dodge after your melee attack. So I was basically unhittable while I was slicing and dicing.
Okay.
It just felt really freaking amazing to pop into an area of a map, mash square a bunch, and at the end of it, everyone's dead.
See?
In a turn-based tactical game.
Yeah.
that's what I was doing. So it was just fantastic.
Are you dissatisfied that you what amounts to a lucky drop got you through the entire thing? Like, are you motivated to play again and see if there's something else that's similarly broken? Like, what's your future with this?
Wow. Harsh. Yes. Are you disappointed in how you won?
I mean,
I get the essence of the question. But
the question is, you should feel shame.
You're not winning the way I want you to win, Dennis.
Hey, that's not what I brought. That's what you brought. Okay.
Yeah. you're going to run into some kind of legendary weapon pretty much every run.
Right.
But I was playing on the easiest difficulty. So I think that's going to be the interesting thing next is, even if I use the same combination of skills that I took and find a good melee weapon, I don't know if that's enough to get me over the hump at a harder difficulty. Not least of which, because, like I said, the one weakness of this thing is bosses. Like, the one thing that's not one shot is bosses. And so yeah. I was very worried going, you know, I didn't know exactly where the end was, but I knew I was getting close. And I was like, I don't want to come all this way just to find out that my build is completely incompatible
right.
With, you know, finishing the game essentially. But I picked up some other cool stuff along the way. I had a rocket launcher, that instead of doing AOE damage, it just focused all of the damage onto one square. So, you know, imagine what they, I guess it's just a cannonball launcher or something, like, you know, there's no splash, but it was ultra powerful. And I had also picked up some items that I really never needed to use, during the run, which you activate the item and it just teleports you away to a random square.
Okay.
And so it's a nice little like emergency button, to get out of a bad situation. But because I was so overpowered and one-shotting everything, I never really needed to use them. I almost traded them out a couple times for other items that I thought would be better, grenades and whatnot. But I hung on to a stack of them, and it wound up being the way I won the boss fight, because I basically jump in and just start slashing at the thing. And because of my dodge chance, you know, was able to hang in there even though I wasn't killing it. Hack away until my health got really low, use a teleporter to escape and heal up, and then jump back in. So again, a little bit cheesy, but I think there's lots of different ways to cheese the game. And so when everything is cheese, then nothing is cheese.
Right.
and I was very happy with getting over the hump and beating the game. So, yeah, Jupiter Hell is completed, at least on easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it even beaten then, if you've only beaten on?
Yeah, what's the sound of one difficulty clapping, I guess.
Yeah.
so I'll be back at it. We'll see. I think I said 2 weeks ago that it felt easy. Like I felt like I was cruising, mm-hmm. and man, did that turn out just to be first run luck. Like,
yeah, since
then, yeah. It was really easy to die from the start. So I don't know what it'll be like hopping up, how big the jump will be in difficulty. Yeah. But the one other thought I had on the game was just how funny some of the stuff was. Like, it definitely carries that over from Doom, the tongue-in-cheek moments. Mm-hmm. For example, there's like this dark cathedral you can get into that's like a special extra area that's super challenging. And, you know, every step you get through it, there's red text that comes up on the screen, like, you have violated the cathedral, mortal. You will die, mortal. We are sending your death, mortal. And then the final one is just, oh, fine, take your prize, mortal. And the door to get into the room opens up. So you go in and pick up all your equipment, and you start to leave, and more red text comes up that says, don't let the door hit your ass on the way out, mortal.
Oh, that's fun.
And that made me giggle. So yeah, the game doesn't take itself too seriously.
That's good.
As any game that deals with a portal to hell on one of Jupiter's moons should not.
Right. So. Yeah. It hasn't earned gravitas.
No, not quite yet. Yeah, so that's Jupiter Hell. Any questions on that?
Better or worse than Snaker X.
Oh man, don't make me compare my babies.
All right.
I think I would still get more. Oh man, now I'm gonna not be able to sleep at night. I still get more mileage out of Snake RX. I'm gonna put my foot down and say it is simpler. Man, I see you on that all the time. I know you got to talk about
this. I know week. What I'm asking is, like, should I jump over to this or not?
The simplicity and just like there is nothing extra in Snake RX than what absolutely needs to be there, and what needs to be there is great. Jupiter Hell probably isn't as tight of an experience, but it's got all this, you know, all this thematic trappings of Doom, mm-hmm. and that works really well for it. And it's a solid game on top. So, you know, it's hard to, if you told me I could only have one for the rest of my life, I would pick Snake RX.
Yeah.
But Jupiter Hell, I'm very happy that I played.
I mean, they're both run based, but it kind of seems like the resemblance ends there to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even in the way you're playing,
busted builds seems to be the game mechanic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
Let's see. I've also been playing Splitgate, and I finally started playing Splitgate with friends. And that is really, really fun. There's a mode. I gotta. It's a kill confirmed mode, or I think they call it like a dog tag mode for the game. Where, you know, when you kill someone, you don't get the point right away. It drops something that you need to go pick up.
Yeah.
What's that called, everybody? Like, kill confirmed gun.
It's called fucked up, dude. That's what it's called.
Yeah, and I believe in COD, it's called kill confirmed.
Okay, there you go. I need to look up what the official name for this is in Splitgate, but everyone calls it teabag confirmed. Okay. The way you pick up what's dropped is you literally run over and teabag the person that you killed.
Right.
This game is toxic.
It's delightful. It's just really funny that they take that thing that is such a staple in this kind of shooter and work that in. Mm-hmm. But the really funny thing is that is also the way that you pick up your teammates drops. And the drops are literally a tea bag that hovers over the character.
Okay, so they're building into it.
Yeah, oh, they're totally leaning into it.
Yeah.
But what it leads to is, you know, you getting down and be like, dude, I'm on the bridge, come teabag me. And that's, you step back, you're like, I need to reconsider my life. But yeah, that kind of mode that's just a little more involved than Team Deathmatch really, really benefits from having people on a mic.
I can imagine that.
So they announced the night we're recording this is 8:24, and they said, hey, their servers are going to go down for a solid 12 hours starting at midnight tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said the real Splitgate starts after that or something. So I don't know how much of that is just them being silly, a lot of the teabags, or how much there's like some sort of big content patch coming. But I think this might be like the final day of the beta, and like after this patch or whatever is going to be considered the full launch.
So I saw a headline before I was coming in as I was looking for a story. Their intention is to keep it in open beta for a while, the foreseeable future is what I saw. So I think that maybe there's possibly something they're doing on the back end. In order to, you know, like maybe there's some kind of like stat reset or change, or maybe there's a big content drop would be my guess as to what that means, given the other thing that I saw.
I'm waiting with bated breath. It should be fun.
Yeah.
So that's Splitgate. And then the only other thing I've been playing is Final Fantasy 14. So I figured this might be a good segue over to David, depending on if you've been playing it, David. But not a lot to say. I am playing as the archer. I unlocked the bard subclass for the archer, which is cool. It makes the, you know, your skill rotation a little less, not a little less complicated, a little more complicated, I should say. But it's still, you know, it's still at the level where I can have the sound off and be paying half attention and still play the game.
Yeah.
Which is the main way that I play it, either because, you know, I'm doing other stuff around the house, or because I've got a podcast on or what have you. You know, it's just enough involvement to feel worth the effort, I guess.
Yeah.
So, that feels like damnation by weak praise. I'm enjoying playing the game.
No, I mean, like what you're describing is like what I would call a podcast game. You know, just because you can play it with split attention doesn't mean it's not worth playing. Dear God, exactly. A third of the things that I play would be disqualified if that was the case.
Well, Duckfeed would be out of business if people didn't feel like they could play with split attention.
I know, right?
Shout out to everyone listening to this while playing a video game right now.
Yeah, what's up? Yeah. We see you. We approve of you.
Mm-hmm. So the game definitely feels like it hits a lull around like end of the 30s, start of the 40s in terms of levels. David, where are you at right now?
I'm just shy of 20.
Okay. I was really impressed at just how tight the experience was up through level 35. It just felt like what you needed to do next and the new mechanics being introduced was just really consistent and fun. And then I kind of finished, I assume, what is the first major story arc. There's kind of a big climactic moment. And the falling action after that is just really, really boring. You go to a new area, which should be super exciting, but the area is super spread out, and it doesn't feel like there's a lot to do in it. And I, you know, I know there's people that know the game really well. It might be one of those areas that it's like, hey, they've been progressively going through and reworking areas of this game and making them awesome. This might just be one of the last areas that they've gone and done that.
So my understanding of this, just listening to other podcasts that have talked about this, is that what you probably found is content that was released at, like, so you finished the story content for the base game for the Realm Reborn content or whatever. And they put out like interstitial content before like the content of the next expansion starts. And because they stack, you know, one by one, that interstitial stuff, you're still going through that. But that stuff is not necessarily as good and as focused. It's just kind of what they put out there to keep people occupied.
It's the clips episode.
Yeah, to the point where I believe like there's ways that you can pay to like basically progress your character to the level where they'll be ready to go and do the other stuff and skip it. Don't quote me on that, but I heard something along those lines.
Okay. Yeah. I think I'm close enough to out of it at this point. I'm level 47 now, I think. I say that like someone's going to correct me on this podcast.
No, I don't
I'm level 47 now. There, say it with confidence. But I'm close enough to out, or so I understand. Like, I think I'm right on the door of actual like rating content and all that. I think someone said it was that all kind of opens up at 50. So I'm excited for that. That's also the point where I'll have to decide if I want to start paying for the game. Yes. I believe. So we'll see. It's on the bubble for me. I'm excited to get to Ishgard. I think it's the city where like everything gets good again. But in the meantime, I've actually started reading content because it's like, okay, I'm getting close enough to the place where everyone says the story gets really good that I should start reading. I've just been skipping through everything up till now, which, sorry, someone out there now considers me a heretic. I apologize.
You don't have to keep them happy.
Yeah, right. The writing has been fun. In one of the most recent quests, I'm going around to all the kind of proteges of a given master to learn how to handle corrupted crystals. And everyone assumes that they are the master's favorite, which is kind of funny.
Okay.
Still having fun with that. Went through the slow period. Hopefully I'm coming out of it. And hopefully the next time I talk about it, I will have some of the cool dungeons and raids. Can you remind me again what kind of character you're playing? So I'm playing as an archer turned bard, which means I sing to buff the party and myself, but also still shoot arrows.
Cool.
Why they thought those go together, I don't know, but they do.
Yeah.
Dancer is also in the same tree, which it's like physical ranged DPS, I think is the theme of the tree that I'm in.
Yeah.
And like archer. Yeah. Duh. I get that. Bard. Okay. Dancer.
That's following the logic of the job system from the other games where bard and dancer were like similar classes, but like only men could be bards and only women could be dancers. Specifically like Final Fantasy Tactics or something like that. It might not have been Bard. It might have been something else, but so it's probably working off of those rules, pulling from that as opposed to like a D&D prestige or specialization.
Yeah, that actually brings up another thought, which is I know I am missing so many references and characters and everything showing up in this game. The one that I've recognized is Cid.
Right.
It's like, oh, hey, that's Cid. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there have been many, many, many more, but I have not gotten any of it, job system included. So
the only other thing I've recognized, other than like some of the obvious ones like Chocobo and Moogles, is Magic Tech.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that has been my experience with Final Fantasy XIV as of late.
Cool. Let's segue over to David. Have you been playing more of that?
Yeah, I have. So I am at there's a quest that basically boils down to like, here's an excuse to make you visit all the other starting cities.
Okay.
You're like, I don't know, delivering a letter, and basically each of the other two cities kind of does a brief exposition dump of like, you know, here's our perspective on the events, you know, that have kind of led up to the history. So okay. There's some, I started in the sort of Arabian Nights kind of desert area that's ruled by the gnome people, the halflings or whatever. I just, I went to this city that's just all pirate and navy themed, mm-hmm. that's ruled by just, I don't know, just giant statuesque people.
Okay.
And then I just got to the, dirty hippie city that's ruled by the elves.
Gotcha. All I can think of when I think of an elf city is Kelithin from EverQuest, the wood elf city where, like, even like the printed strategy guide that I had said, hey, maybe don't start here. If you're new to the game and just learning how to move around, because it's literally a bunch of platforms at the top of trees with no railings. And yeah. If you just walked around, it would just be raining newbies.
Yep. Like,
oh man. Continue, sorry.
So my understanding from, you know, kind of some of the stuff I've read is what this is leading to is, and Dennis, maybe you can give me some insight. I guess I will soon to have to choose a quote unquote grand company.
Yeah, which I understand has literally no impact on the game.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun.
Yeah, I feel like this was something that apparently was at some point the equivalent of like Horde or Alliance maybe, but then they got bored. And we're like, it's easier to write the story if we don't do that, maybe?
I kind of lied. The one thing that is very different about all of them is they all have their own salute. So the very important decision you have to make is which salute do you think is coolest?
Okay. So which did you go with?
I went with the elves one because they seemed the most arrow guy-esque.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, I'm torn. I've heard also that even though you won't wear it in endgame, like, if you want to just fashion souls it up, that could be a factor.
Yeah, I could see that being a thing.
Right, and the sea people have, like, badass pirate outfits.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds dope.
On the other hand, I feel like choosing the Arabian Nights era is likely to maximize my number of the adorable little halfling NPCs that just make literally every cutscene better.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, yeah.
I can't get over, there was a, you know, you'll encounter them with like facial hair and mustaches, and you can't, like, I play with the camera fairly zoomed out. You can't tell that they've got facial hair until you see them in a cutscene. You're like, oh, mustache. That's out of place.
Yep. So, that's about where I'm at. And I think my understanding is this is kind of one of the big kind of turning points, because this is like where you get a mount and all that sort of stuff. So,
Yeah, the mount is nice. And don't be like me and forget that you can summon your mount as a combat partner. I have literally not done that since they introduced the mechanic to me. And, you know, I haven't noticed it as much because I'm an archer, and so I kind of can solo pretty well. But I understand for some tanks and healer classes, like, having that combat partner is literally required.
So what I don't understand is, my understanding is that it can fulfill any of the three roles that, you know, tank, DPS, or healer. How does a chocobo healer work?
I would know. I haven't used it.
Yeah, that's just, I don't know. I'm probably going to do that. Like, I'm probably going to go with DPS because I seem to be a pretty good, you know, combination of DPS and tanky, so I probably don't need anything. But I'm going to have to switch it to healer at least once just to see how that works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I missed last week. What class are you playing?
The Pugilist.
Okay. Very cool.
So I'm debating. I'm interested in maybe one of the like Gunhaver classes, because I really like the Magitek stuff from Final Fantasy. Mm-hmm. But apparently those you have to be like level 50 to unlock.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, that's tied to a particular expansion, is when they added the Corsairs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, other than that, I dipped back into Fallout 76 because they had their, I don't know how often, monthly something, Meat Day celebration. Meat Week. So Meat Week, one of the characters in the game is a good super mutant named Graham, who goes around with his pack Brahmin named Chally the Moo Moo, and is normally just like a wandering vendor that, you know, has some exclusive things you can buy from him. But for Meat Week, he basically sets up a barbecue, and every 15 minutes there's group encounters for you to go out and like hunt various types of meat. And then, I don't know, every so often, maybe every hour or something, there's a barbecue event where you have to run around and cook all the meat that you got from the other events, collect shoot possums and chickens and rabbits and things like that. They're all like level one characters to get like snacks and gather plants and put out fires and basically just make sure that the barbecue is a success. And then
please tell me that you always have to fight off those gigantic fire spewing ants.
No, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
How do you think they like barbecue?
Oh yeah. 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 We could find a symbiotic relationship with them.
Mm hmm.
Although there is a another mission where you tell campfire stories and have to fight off hordes of mosquitoes. So I feel like they kind of get some of that.
Okay.
But yeah, and then you get loot. It's kind of a weird event.
Yeah. I'm a little bit annoyed that there are super mutants. Does the game still take place in, 2176 or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah, super mutants shouldn't exist yet. Super mutants are made by the Master over in, Oregon.
So I think my understanding is that, some of the area you find some researchers that were supposed to be some of the early, research on the I forget what they call the like forced evolution virus.
Yeah, the FEV. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's the justification.
Okay.
But I mean,
it honestly doesn't matter. I just
I'm not a big fan of, you know, writing good stories, so
I mean and they're not necessarily being terribly observant of what happened in the previous ones. So it's not that it matters. I more was kind of like commenting that I was annoyed with myself for being.
Oh yeah. No, that's legit. I'm all about that type of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing I'm kind of getting ready for is, I don't know if you've saw, they've announced there's going to be an expansion. Coming up called The Pit.
Yeah.
Where you go to Pittsburgh, which is apparently like a massive slave colony.
That's what it was in it was Fallout 3 DLC. The Pit's not a good place.
Yeah, so I think most of the human NPCs that they added, at least the non-raiders, are like refugees from the Pit.
Makes sense in West Virginia, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm hoping they're apparently going to kind of be doing a expedition type of thing. I would really like to see them getting you out of America to, you know, to see what's going on. Like, I know I want to go to, Mexico and fight giant mutant chupacabras and whatever else, or see what's going on in China, things like that.
I've had this conversation before. I mean, again, everything's thrown out. My idea of Fallout is one that is very tied up specifically with like post-war mid-century Americana kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems so specific that I kind of can't separate that tone and subject matter from it enough to, you know, to think that it could go someplace else and still have its identity, right?
Is there nothing in the lore that alludes to outside of America? I'm surprised there isn't some sort of like, yes, and this is the only place that is not, you know, or that can still support life.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible everywhere. I believe that there's allusions to like vault-like experiments that were set up in other places. And like, you know, mm-hmm. you go into like a simulation of the battle for Anchorage, and you fight the Chinese that are coming over there, kind of as part of the war, the end of the world. But yeah, I think that it is implied. Hey, this is not an apocalypse that only happened in America, and it is terrible everywhere.
Although I think it is implied that China government at least has continuity.
I mean, because like the American government had a little bit of continuity.
What?
The American government had a little bit of continuity until Fallout 2, yeah. And then a little bit in Fallout 3.
A little bit in Fallout 76.
Huh.
Technically, you can become the president of the United States.
Oh, you can start the Enclave?
So you, in the mission, you have to join the Enclave.
Okay.
But then there's also a mission that basically, like, you start up the election computer or whatever and have to run to all of the towns around and just stuff the ballot for yourself.
Okay.
Oh. And if you successfully do so, you become the president of the United States. And that can actually, like, a reoccurring thing in this version, since a big theme of 76 is the effects of automation upon the community.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole bunch of areas where, you know, you basically have to deal with automated bureaucracy in missions.
Okay.
And becoming president lets you bypass a lot of that.
Oh, nice.
Because there's a whole bunch of stuff like my character first joined the army and then eventually became a general.
Okay.
But like if you're the president, technically you're the
superior. You're
the commander in chief, so you just automatically get credit for all that.
Nice.
So yeah, it still has its share of weirdness, but yeah, the Enclave is still kind of around. The Brotherhood of Steel has actually been added in.
Yeah, that was like last fall or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, I haven't dealt with it a whole lot. The thing that is kind of interesting mechanic is at this point, the Brotherhood of Steel only pretty much only accepts people that were former military.
Okay.
For membership, and that then has kind of the side effect of them just not being able, you know, knowing how to get along with any of the other factions.
Right.
So you're a little bit seeing kind of what led to how dysfunctional the Brotherhood is in a lot of the later games.
Cool.
So.
Nice.
So yeah, I'm hoping it, you know, continues to pull in some interesting things.
Yeah. Neat. Well, I'll be curious to hear how they treat the pit. That was one of the better DLCs of Fallout 3.
Nice.
Yeah. Neat.
That's all I got.
Cool. So you had Final Fantasy 14 and Fallout 76. And before that, Dennis had Jupiter, Hell, Splitgate, and Final Fantasy 14. I forgot to do the Correct. Recap after. Yes. Ben, you said you've been playing some stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say Jupiter, Hell, I guess, is the only game without a...
Without a number?
Well, the first game I'm going to talk about is I've been playing 12 Minutes over the weekend.
I've heard really bad stuff about it.
Bad stuff?
Yeah.
Look, here, bottom line, you're going to hit listen to Willem Dafoe talk.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah.
It can't be that bad. No, I don't know.
I played Beyond Two Souls.
We made that joke last week.
If there's any like controversy around this game, a little bit unfounded. This like the spoiler alert, the takeaway, this is just it's a decent game. You know what I mean? Mm. Like it's not going to like blow you away. It's not like a bad game. It's not like a poorly made game or anything. Mm. Basically, what it made me think of is like maybe in the early aughts, like basically all the types of like flash games on the internet. The one I was thinking of in particular, and I'm not going to be able to describe it correctly, but it was this. I think it was there's this game where it's like you're on an island and you can choose to add different elements to it, like add a river or add some bees or something or whatever. But like it ended up being a puzzle game where it's like if you did things in the exact right order, like everything would grow and like affect one another and you'd have this like beautiful like palace monster at the end of it or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's landing for anyone or not.
I remember this kind of game, not that game specifically, though.
Okay, so the point that I'm trying to get at is 12 Minutes is like a very polished version of that sort of experience, where it's a very like simple like type of game where it's like, oh, okay, it's a loop game. I can explore these different like avenues, but it's a AAA version of that instead of you playing it like on the internet. It's not like as open-ended as like something like Outer Wilds, but it's not really intending to be. The scope is very small. I don't want to talk too much about the story because that's kind of the game.
Yeah,
and I went into the game not knowing anything about it, and I'm glad that I did that. So mm-hmm. I don't want to take that away from anyone who wants to play it. I'll speak in very broad strokes. There are three voice actors in it, which I think we mentioned last week on
Willem Dafoe, Daisy Ridley, James McAvoy.
Yeah. And you know, it's like, I don't know if I would necessarily outside of Dafoe, I don't know if I'd pick out their voices and be like, oh, that's that person. But that's okay. Like whether they're there or not. I don't know. It's like, you might've been a better choice to have like video game voice actors in certain points, but I'm not sure if it's the fault of them or if it's just the fault of the design in the game, because again, like the game's about exploring different options that you can have, but there's, you know, there's certain like invisible walls to it in a sense where it's like, okay, if you go down this path, we're going to show you the same ending that also applies in a lot of other situations.
Yeah.
So there might be a transition in dialogue from, you know, this moment to this other moment, and that might not always like have a clear transition.
Are you playing as a person in the story, or are you like kind of an omniscient third person narrator who can like influence things that are happening in the world?
Yeah, so I guess I'll speak in very broad strokes. There are three main characters in the game, voiced by the three people that we just named. You are playing as one of them. Your character is stuck in a time loop, and so the goal is to figure out how to get out of that.
Okay.
Not dissimilar from Outer Wilds in that sense. That's basically all I'll say about the story, I guess.
Okay.
Let me ask this, which will hopefully be broad enough for you to answer. Like, does the fact that, you know, everything kind of hits the same beats, maybe just in a different order, or you know, what you just mentioned, is that thematically sound, or is that like, hey, we promised everything was going to be unique, but we wound up having to recycle things? Feel like fits or not?
Don't overinterpret what I'm saying. Like this will happen like in a couple different situations, but it's not something to the extent of like every permutation hits the same note all the time. It just has the same problems that a lot of the games have, which is where you're repeating a lot of the same content over and over again as you're exploring it. Where it's like, all right, I'm going to do these five actions the same, but I'm going to switch this one. Where it's like, okay, well, you're playing that, you know, same scene again, like exactly. So that part can get repetitive, but there's not a lot of options around that. They do a good job of, there's like one way. So in this, even though it's called 12 minutes, it's a 10-minute loop that you're stuck in. There's probably an explanation for that, I imagine, when you beat the game. I'm only like a certain amount of way through it, like maybe half to two-thirds of the way through it. I forget what I was going to say. They do a good job of like... it's a very, I guess, like elegant in a way. Like the ways that you can interact with the environment, they do a good job of doing a lot of different options with only a few sort of items. So they they're very judicious in picking like how you could interact with the world. And they do a good job of like kind of giving you clues or kind of giving you a lot of threads that you can kind of pull to explore different options of what you can do in the loop. So again, like this isn't, I'm not by any means like shitting on this game. I do think there's a lot of good parts about this game. I think there's a lot of good polish on the game. I think there's good presentation on it. But it does have like a few drawbacks in a few places. Like going back to the invisible walls, thing that I was talking about, there's a few times where it kind of, goes against like the fiction of the game where it's like, I really want to do this option. And there's not really a valid reason why I can't, but you are forcing me down like a certain option here.
Oh no.
Even if I try different things, like you're forcing this certain event to happen.
Yeah.
But it's not like, this is kind of like if, when you've gone far enough down a path, so I can kind of understand that it's like, they need to kind of do a curtain call sort of thing. And like they, you know, you can't like have infinite permutations in every direction or whatever. But they do a good job of like, there's a good sense of discovery there where you're like, oh, can I try this one thing? And then going and doing it. Oh, wow. This works, you know, or, oh, this opens up like this brand new thing.
Yeah.
And it does do a really good job of like handling, a lot of like, if A then B happens sort of things. Like that part is pretty impressive, because it does a pretty solid job of like tracking like, okay, you've done these like three or four things, so then this thing will happen because you did these, you know, it won't happen because you did this thing earlier. It does a pretty good job of tracking that. There's a couple of places where there might be some like hiccups or kind of like, you know, eye rolly things where it doesn't, you know, track 100%. But again, I'm pretty satisfied with how it does that, even if there's a few things that don't work.
Is there anything that keeps track of it for you? Like, is there, you know, like in a visual novel, there would be a flow chart? Okay, so there's not like an interface that says like, hey, here's a choice that you made that you didn't realize was a choice, you know.
Yeah.
Recreate the stuff before that to get there again.
While I can see the utility of that, it's kind of like the idea of having like a mini map, where it's helpful. There's utility in it, but it kind of breaks the immersion of it. And so I'm okay with how they did it in this one, where they, at least right now, they haven't given you any of that sort of information. Mm-hmm. There are some things, because the idea is like, you're not, I'm trying to think of an analogy. It's not like you go down one path and then like you have consciousness of like all the different things you've tried. Mm-hmm. So one thing that's nice is the dialogue's like progressive. So like, you'll see previous options that you've tried and they'll like gray out ones that you've already done and they'll highlight ones that are new options too. Mm-hmm. So like, so it's not like you don't run into an issue where it's like kind of going, like talking about like the map of different things you've tried. They don't really track it like that, but they do like, oh, here's a new thing that I can say because I've gone down this certain path. So they kind of like denote it that way, I guess. So it's a little bit different.
Okay.
So like, if a run that I would do right now would be different than the very first run that I did in the game, because I've learned things since then. So that part is kind of nice that your character keeps that in mind. But that's also something that's kind of adds to the complexity of the game. Which is, you know, it's like why they have to cap it at 10 minutes. Like that by itself is already so difficult to manage all the different things. So, so I played this. I had a friend come over. It's one of my college roommates. So we played it together. So I'm in a weird situation where I don't want to continue playing it because we have played 100% of it together. We texted like four different things we want to try next when we play the game.
Okay.
And so that's, I think, where we'll pick up the next time that we play it.
Yeah.
There is like a little bit of like fatigue where it's like, you know, you get to a point where you think you've tried everything. And so you have to like sit back and think like, okay, what element have they told me about that I haven't like pursued or investigated yet? And so you kind of have to like sit back and think about that and then try that. And so we had to do that a few times and then had a few breakthroughs. And we're now at the point where we're kind of having to scratch our heads and figure out what's left to pursue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a question. Is there a way to end your loop early?
There's a kitchen knife. You can stab yourself like immediately at the beginning of the loop if you want to.
Okay.
And that's one thing that's interesting is they commit to kind of like similar to Inside, where they commit to showing you all the death animations.
Right.
Like they commit in this where it's like any choice that you want to do, they've committed to supporting that. And so they'll show you the effect of whatever choice you want to do.
So I do not know specifically, and I don't want to like get you bracing for something that may not be there. You know, nobody is like spoiled specifically. People who have said like, hey, this isn't okay. Have gotten to the end and said that like it goes in some places that are actually really hard to defend.
I see.
Subject matter wise, depiction is not endorsement, but I like the, you know, things that I have seen are just kind of like, yeah, that kind of came out of nowhere and it didn't earn that. I don't know specifically what it is. I can infer, but like that has been something that is cropped up a few different times. So like I think that's so
difficult in a game where like players are making choices and having agency over how much they see, because, you know, one series of choices could make the result completely earned, and one series of choices that kind of fast tracks you to a result could make it feel completely unearned.
Yeah. The way that I'm led to believe, it's like that there is a particular set of things that you have to play through a bunch of different loops to figure out, you know, that you have to do in order to get out of it. And that path will always take you through this stuff.
Darkest timeline situation.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of like part for you, Ben, and part for like anybody else who may be thinking, I like time loop stuff. Time loop media is good. The Endless is an amazing movie. wow. Yeah, if you're gonna, you know, but like if you're gonna step in, be aware that like that, you know, like, you know, you can probably look and see like maybe like a more non-spoiler, but like, you know, just kind of like a content warning, like, hey, be braced for this, or don't go into this if you're if it's gonna make your day worse, kind of thing. So
yeah.
That has been the majority of what I've seen is the subject matter. And then along with like some things that you're kind of saying, which is like some of the iteration ends up being just a little bit more tedious than they would like, just kind of because of the way that the loops are built.
It's kind of a weird problem because I believe I said the same thing when I was playing it, where it kind of got repetitive, like the different runs where you do like 70% of the same thing. So I don't know. It seems like it's a problem inherent to like, and it's another thing too, where it is a problem while you're playing it. But like now when I look back at the Outer Wilds, it's like, oh yeah, that game was fun. I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Like you forget about like the tedium while you're playing it. So it's like, I don't know how I feel about it. You know, it's like, I don't know how you avoid it in a game. And but then it's weird because it's not like a lasting problem, at least in some cases, because you don't remember those parts as much.
Yeah, distance and time compress the tedium.
Yeah. But like, you know, I think it's a pretty polished game, and I think it handles something pretty well. I haven't gotten all the way through the story, so maybe there's some negative experiences I'll have before I'm done with the game. But for now, I don't see anything wrong with it. I'll put it that way.
And
priced at like $22.50, and it feels like a AAA production type game. I think that's like fair pricing for it. Certainly would not begrudge anyone for like waiting until it so like $10 or $5 or something like that too.
It came out day and date on Game Pass as well. So like I downloaded it to my Xbox just in case I got the urge to play a 4-hour game at some point, you know, just as a palate cleanser. Because it looks interesting, even if I know it, you know, it doesn't stick the landing, you know, based on other people who have gone that way. So like Game Pass may be a good way to dip into that.
Mm-hmm. And you get to hear Willem Dafoe talk, so that part is fun, no matter what.
Yeah. Neat. 12 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I guess I got one or two more. Yeah, I got one or two more to talk. That was the big one, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I still want to keep talking about SNKRX since I played it some more this week. I got to level 103 when I was playing this past week, which is the highest that I've ever gotten. I think I've never really done the loops because I'd always update like what level I'm on. But I had gotten to 5, which apparently you can get past level 5. Dennis, were you aware of this?
NG plus level 5?
You can get past that, apparently.
I'm not aware.
Yeah, so I went to the one person who was streaming SNKRX on Twitch, and they mentioned that if you beat it on N plus 5, if you hit escape to the options menu, you can increment the level from there. And like that's how you go to the next level, and that apparently goes up to like 12.
Yeah, I know the developer is actively working on the game and putting in new stuff. So is that perhaps something that got added recently?
So the streamer I was watching was trying to beat the game on N plus 5 so that they could do this because they had just found out about it. So it might be something new.
That would be my guess.
But before even finding out about that, I'd finally beaten on N plus 5, and I had a warrior merchant build. And so I was really happy with that. It went really strong. And it was sad early exiting at 103. Basically, it's like if I could last like maybe 30 seconds, then I would win for sure. Because I had the warriors.
Me too, bro. Me too.
Well, like the warriors are gaining defense like every 5 seconds. And then I had two different perks. I had one perk where it's like anytime any warrior takes damage, everyone else increases their defense. So there's like a good pattern where it doesn't matter if they kill everyone, then all your people become invincible. So I think I mentioned this, like I had like a single person left and they had like, you know, an iota of health, but they could last like 2 or 3 waves. And I just ran into everyone and killed them, you know, without any like special attack or anything like that. Just because like they had so much defense, like any attack wasn't doing anything. But you get to a weird point when you get to the levels that high where it's like, if you kill people very quick, there's the things that explode. And yeah, so the like,
guys.
Yeah, they are very dangerous at high level. It's like you kill like 6 or 7 of them and then they're all like shooting at you. Mm-hmm. So you need like some sort of like either fast acting healing mechanism or like highly defensive thing or some way to deal them.
At that point, you know, your train is now 10 people long, right?
12
people long? Yeah. 12 long. So you're literally not able to get out of the way of these guys, even if you could maneuver perfectly.
Yeah.
I could see that being the run killer very consistently in the late game.
Yeah. There's a couple other like weird things when you get to levels that high. The elite fights are easy, like easy as can be, because you just like one shot the elite and then it's like over. It's the waves of people which are the difficult levels. And so the other thing that was interesting is, so I was playing warriors merchants. Merchants is one of the few class types that actually scales as you continue on with levels. A lot of things will cap out. You stop getting artifacts after you've beaten the game once, and the rest of the loops, the enemies get more difficult, but typically your people stay the same. There's one difference though, is there's a perk for merchants where they deal damage based on a percentage of the gold you have, and you keep getting gold as the game progresses, run over run. So they actually scale with the difficulty. And that's why you can like one shot the bosses, is you have like 5,000 gold. And so like the one that deals damage based on how much money you have will just kill anything in one shot, which is great. But when you have like 100 things that you're trying to kill, that's not like quick enough to do all the work. You still need like other people to kill things. So it's definitely changed like how I think about the game, because now it's like when I'm choosing artifacts, it's like, okay, is this artifact going to be good if I make it to like level 50 or level 100 or something like that? Does it actually scale? Like, even if it's really good for a class, like if I beat the run once, but then enemies are getting more difficult and then I'm not doing anything, that will that even work, you know?
Yeah. I haven't paid enough attention to quote unquote the meta, but I have to imagine there's one optimal build. And honestly, like once you get up to a couple thousand gold, you can get any build just by by brute force, right? You can just keep on refreshing your pool until you see what you want.
Yes, but the artifacts are permanent.
But the artifacts are permanent. So I imagine what you have to do is just like build towards that optimal thing that you know you can get in the late game, hope you get the right artifacts for that, and then survive long enough to buy exactly what you want.
Yeah. So it's definitely like changed the meta of the game a little bit. So that's made it like more interesting. For example, like I tried doing a build where it's like area of effect build, because that makes more sense, where it's like, okay, it doesn't matter if there's 10 or 100. If I'm dealing damage like in this square area, it doesn't matter how many people are there. Or in some cases, it could be even better if there's a lot of people there. So I've tried things like that, or trying going in like that sort of direction to see if those types of builds work. So that game continues to be fun, and I'm happy that the game like opened up that much in the past week, and that's kind of changed the way I thought about it. So, So best $3 game I've played for sure.
you've definitely gotten your miles out of it.
Yeah.
Here's the question: do you think you would have tried it in the first place if it was a higher price?
Well, I mean, somebody bought it for. So in that sense, it doesn't matter. But yeah, I think I have, which is pretty, that's pretty good for $3. Mm-hmm. But so I don't know if I can answer that question. I'm not sure where I would have not bought it at. But it's, I mean, that's a tough sell, though. Like if you were trying to sell that game for like 10 or 20 bucks or something.
It doesn't show well in screenshots.
Yeah. But like $3. I'd buy plenty of things for $3. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I'm happy I finally beat the N+5. I think it's funny that the cursors achievement, it has a lower percentage than N+5. Like people just don't beat the game with cursors for some reason.
just by steering around with a mouse. Is that what you, what?
Well,
it's a class that curses people, so their attack doesn't necessarily do direct damage, but it curses the enemy with something that has a positive effect, either damage over time, or they explode when they die, or yada yada.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see like what the lowest percentage achievement is once I unlock them, but mm-hmm. that'll be a conversation for another time when that happens. Mm-hmm. So, outside of all that, I've played one other game over the weekend, and this is a throwback. I fired up my PS3 and I played some Civilization Revolution.
Oh, dang.
What?
Yeah, I hadn't played that in a good, 5 to 10 years, maybe.
Oh, man, that jeopardized my grades when that came out on DS back in college. Yeah.
It was definitely fun going back to it. The technology progression seems like it's kind of written in stone as far as what I pursue. I mean, I try and rush democracy and then try and rush tanks. And that's kind of my recipe for victory. The thing that I was noticing playing it this time that I didn't really pick up on in previous runs is just thinking about like the very first stages of the game, like what's like most important and how to like kind of get an early edge. So I was playing as the, I think like the Aztecs, and the reason why I was doing that is because they start with like gold at the beginning of the game, like 50 gold. So you can rush two warrior builds in the first two turns. Because usually what happens in the first two turns, you don't have any, you have no money and you just have to build stuff. So you have to like either build a worker or you can build a population or you can invest in science. And those are your options. Mm-hmm. But for any of those things, it takes like 5 turns to do anything.
Yeah.
So the first 5 turns are kind of wasted. So building like rushing production on warriors for the first 2 turns with the gold mm-hmm. that you have, and then like sending them out to find more stuff to get more gold to rush more workers.
It's like a Zerg rush, but against the barbarians.
To basically like cast a wide net at the beginning, see where everyone else is. It seemed to be pretty effective. I was able to beat on deity with that. So that was fun. I played a few levels like on the easier difficulties for the first ones that I played. Basically, like Sunday, I was just like, I am not doing anything today. I have all the food that I need inside. I'm just going to like sit inside and play this all day, because I was kind of on house arrest anyway with work. So it was a good opportunity to do that. Yeah, I don't know. The game's still good. It still holds up. The only thing I was disappointed by is just like how much the tech tree seems to be like. That seems to be pretty like immutable, because it's like you need to rush democracy so you can get the acolytes so that you can defend your towns. And then once you get tanks, it's like GG. You can just kill anything by like grouping up. So
unless you're going for a different kind of win.
Well, even still, you just kill everyone with tanks and then you pick which way you want to win.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yep. Nice. That's all I got.
Man, Civ Rev. It's a good ass game. So you had 12 minutes, Snake RX and Civilization Revolution. I've just got one. A game called Hell Architect.
Ooh.
Yeah. So this
you
is
tell.
it's a weird coincidence, because I had because Gary and I were just kind of talking like, oh, like, wouldn't it be fun if there was just a game where you could build and run hell and like mete out like ironic punishments for like what people did in life.
Are there know? 9 levels? I need to know now.
I haven't gotten far enough to see, and I may not. Dun, dun, dun.
No. I see mixed on Steam.
So we were joking about that, and a Twitter account that I follow that I really recommend people do, it's called @microtrailers. The account name is Steam Trailers in 6 seconds. Basically, whenever anything is added to Steam, no matter like how high or low profile it is, and when stuff goes out of early access into full release, it automatically posts just like a 6 second GIF of the trailer you know, to show you, along with like the price and like a tag with the genres and stuff. So I saw this. It just got released like last week, and I was like, oh dang, I'd really want to check that out. I saw that the reviews were mixed, and nothing that I saw online was especially heartening. But I was like, ah, screw it. It's been a while since I've talked about something like really new on the level, so I'll just throw
it
in.
It's got Architect in the name. It has to be at least a little bit for you.
Yeah, yeah. So there's that, and that's kind of it's a little bit it's undoing. So this ends up being very similar to Prison Architect, very similar to RimWorld, any number of these colony builder games. They are billions and stuff like that. Like it's just an offshoot of city builder, with kind of this focus on survival and accumulating a whole bunch of different resources. Like Frostpunk would nestle into this pretty nicely. Bunch of stuff that's like specifically like Cole can't play it because Cole has a problem, you know, kind of things.
I was gonna say, you're naming a bunch of games that you like, but I'm waiting for the shoe to drop here.
Yeah, I mean, so like the shoe to drop is that's fine. Yeah. Like, so the problem is, this actually would maybe be like a good entry into this for a couple of different reasons. Ultimately, it ends up being like way too simple for me, and that's what makes me feel a little bit like not as much like playing it. You have a problem if I'm sitting down and thinking, man, this reminds me of RimWorld, and I think, ah, shit, I could just be firing up RimWorld right now. There's expansions that they've released and stuff. You know, like there's good, this reminds me of something, and there's bad, this reminds me of something. And this was kind of the bad. It just kind of made me really wish that I was playing the kind of the more intricate, unforgiving kind of game. There are a couple different reasons for that. Like, you know, a lot of the systems that you're managing are just like, what if we renamed it in a way that made it, a little bit more like hell. So like, instead of a farm, it's like a wall of meat that occasionally grows more meat that can be processed into food. By somebody who's working, stuff like that. So, you know, like a lot of it is just like, let's scratch the name off of this and put it on something else. Something that is very strange about this is that instead of being like a top-down map view, this is like side-on, like side-scrolling.
It's like XCOM.
No, not even that. Like this is like you're looking at it from the side. So
like XCOM base.
Yeah, I was about to say. Okay.
Yeah. Kind of like XCOM, the XCOM base kind of thing a little bit.
Weird pull for reference on the 2D side view.
What'd you say, David?
So the good part of XCOM, or at least the better part of XCOM.
I'm not going to take a position on that.
Certainly the part I spent way too much time on.
So like this creates a bunch of problems. Like, you know, you need to dig into in the world to get dirt and resources and stuff like that, you know, instead of going to like nodes and things. You can't dig on a spot where something is has been built. And also, like, as you dig down, you also have to like plan and figure out a way for your people to get to, you know, to build back up. To get back up. So like it's really, really easy to like issue a command and nobody can execute that command because it's impossible to get where you want them to go. And there's no like auto pathing. There's also like really sloppy like job allocation. Like you can prioritize certain jobs and you can through something called the Hellployment Agency, which they probably could have thought about that a little bit more. You can specialize people and say like, hey, you know, I need you to be the person who does my digging, or I need you to be the person who does my cooking and stuff like that. Like you can designate all that, but like left to its own devices, it won't say like, okay, say somebody is right next to the thing that you're trying to build. And like they're digging something and you press the button to build something, it'll call somebody who's really far away to run over and start building that thing. When the person who's closer frees up, it won't cancel that queue and then have that person start building it sooner. It will still keep that person who's really far away, like climbing up and down ladders, getting over to where it is. That feels nitpicky, but like that is really, really important in a Dwarf Fortress Rimworld style thing, where it will, you know, like pathfind and kind of choose dynamically. Like if conditions change, you know, reroute people to get them, you know, to get them to the places. So like I just start a job and it doesn't go and like, oh, yeah, it's because it didn't like multiplex that in a weird way.
Yeah, bringing up Frostpunk's a good example because that one, it's like pretty completely hands off in terms of what people are doing. Like, yeah. You just issue very high level commands and it takes care of itself.
Yeah. You say, I want this built here, and then it will, you know, if there are free workers available, it will, you know, they'll come over to it. Right.
Do you think there's any chance that they were trying to go the meta angle and that they are the hell architects of playing a game?
No, because like, so the thing that makes this specifically hell is that you have two resources. You have suffering and you have, I forget what it's like, essence. Okay. Suffering you get by putting people into torture devices. And you know, you have to like match the torture device to their individual traits. So like this person is afraid of blood, so I need to put them into the Iron Maiden in order to extract the most suffering from them. If a person is miserable, like if all of their sims needs meters are redlining, if they're low, you will get less suffering from them, because if everything is suffering, nothing is. Which is a funny thing to say out loud about this very cartoony game. So like you have to, you know, it's not great amenities, but you have to give them places to sleep and you have to give them, you know, stuff to eat and stuff like that in order to keep them good enough to work, because they're also the people who like build and dig and stuff. Yeah. And also like you get more essence. So you get essence by sacrificing people. And you get more essence if they're in good condition and if they're high skills.
Okay. Wait, where do they go when you sacrifice them?
Limbo.
Oh.
Yeah. And there's a system to like bring them back. Like you can use suffering to buy people back from limbo, and they come back with different traits from having been there because they're doing their own stuff up there. Presumably, filling out paperwork.
With the ability to walk under very low bars.
It's extremely useful for pathfinding. They can get through tight spaces.
I just watching a video, I think it's hilarious that when you send someone to a suffering location, they just kind of go and throw themselves in.
Yep. Like the gesture to do that is you take your little demon hand and like pick them up and like drag them over to it. But that literally is just saying, hey, you come over here.
Fine, I'll hop in the lava hot tub.
Here I go suffering again.
Yeah. And I think that is something that it's really leaning on. It's a charming game. Like there's some, you know, like there are some jokes I think that are like missed opportunities. You know, it's not exactly as clever, I think, as it could be. But like it's charming and it could be a pretty good, like, I don't know, like RimWorld, at least back when I played them, RimWorld and Prison Architect were pretty foreboding. You know, like they didn't necessarily like give you a gentle ramp into them. So like if you're like interested in this kind of game, I think that there are worse things you could do than to give this a shot. But like right now, like if you're like into this kind of thing at all, you know, it sucks because like everything that I could point to as like, oh, yeah, go and play this one is something that came out a few years ago. But like, I think that the complexity ceiling on this one, it doesn't inspire confidence in me as in being like a thing where you're really managing a lot of crises and stuff like that. Trying to put together a really efficient design in a Frostpunk. I'm economizing space in order to more efficiently use heating. Kind of way, or in a like satisfactory kind of way where like my layout is literally the lifeblood of how this thing goes together. So I think that it doesn't force you to make really hard choices, and that is both the thing that might make this good for some people and it makes it less interesting for others.
So do you see this as having potential to be kind of patched into relevance in the future? Like, do there seem to be good enough bones here that a year from now we can come back and maybe recommend it more?
Maybe. Yeah. Like they've got notes in the Steam page about new content and patches that they're working on. This was in early access. And so, you know, it may just be like, oh, you think you hate it now? You should have played it 6 months ago. Like who knows? I don't hate this game. I was more just doing a vacation reference there. But it seems like something that they are actively working on. So maybe, you know, that's the nice thing about games that are released under this model. Nowadays, they can completely change. Look at Final Fantasy 14, right?
I just pulled up a random Let's Play of the opening of the game and have been skimming forward. And, you know, 40 minutes in, the person is still kind of like their focus, it feels like, is in the same, I don't know, within 10 squares of the starting door that they started on.
Yeah.
It feels like, at least the way this person is playing, it doesn't look like there's much incentive to really spread out.
Could just be
the person I'm watching though.
I jumped into like the sandbox mode to kind of play around with this after I did the tutorials. I didn't see an awful lot of like make this map bigger. Also, like the only real benefit that you have for like expanding beyond where you're initially at is getting more resource nodes. But like you can just kind of build platforms and build all of the stuff that you need there. There's not an awful lot in terms of like, base design going on that you necessarily need to do. Yeah. So it's a bummer. I was underwhelmed. But, you know, it may be for some people. I just, if you have said amen when I have sung the praises of your Frostpunks and your RimWorlds, this may be just a little bit too Fisher Price for you.
Yeah, I was gonna say, when you're saying what to tell people to play, I guess it's just wait for the next Frostpunk.
Yeah, Frostpunk 2. Oof, man. Yeah, that'll be dangerous. And that's all I've got. Hull Architect. Are there any other questions about that?
How has Chronocross been going?
It's been going good. I didn't stream on Monday. I'm going to be streaming tomorrow and Friday. It's a fun game. Yeah.
I checked a past VOD, I think a past VOD, but I hadn't put it together. I thought you were doing Chrono Trigger, but I saw
the one that you kind of cut out there. What's up?
I thought you were playing Chrono Trigger for some reason. My brain just switched it around when you were saying it last week. Because I had only played Chrono Cross, I had not played Chrono Trigger. So I was happy to see that I understand what game you're playing. And that game's sweet. So.
I hope to solidify the schedule here pretty soon and get back to doing it. Like, I want to do at least one non-horror, non-Chrono Cross stream. Playing weird stuff, weird stuff in, you know, because those simulator games were fun.
Which way did you break into the castle, or have you done that yet?
I used Guile. I went up the, I took the boat and went up the sidewall.
Okay,
cool. Yeah, as opposed to going with Nikki or with Pierre. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Cool. Yeah. If people want to watch that, I generally start at noon Eastern time on a Monday, Wednesday, or a Friday. Next week, as people are hearing, I'm going to be observing the September 1st boycott on Twitch in order to get them to do something about hate raids. Yeah. Hmm. Mm-hmm. So
wait, so what is this?
I hadn't heard of this.
No. Just shitheads are kind of like banding together and like all at once, like crashing into people's channels and spamming them with, you know, hate language and stuff like that, getting around like word filters and stuff. And Twitch has done basically nothing to address that. So a number of people are withholding, are not streaming on that day. So, yeah.
It's going to be a banner day for Mixer.
Oh, I've got really, really bad news for you on that.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, well, I should tell the story of what inspired this question. We were talking on one of the Duckfeed Slack channels about like a Doom inspired distortion pedal. Mm-hmm. And I asked if it could have the shotgun cocking noise every time you turned it on. And then someone else said that it should have the door slam noise every time it turned off.
Oh, wow.
And then we started talking about other noises you could add in. So that started ramping up. At the same time, we watched The Pink Panther recently, the Steve Martin one with my kids.
Mm-hmm. And your kids were in that movie?
Oh, yeah. That 90% of it went right over the heads, but they enjoyed the hell out of it.
Oh, no. I just did the way that you made it, the way that you said it made it sound. Oh, you know, the Pink Panther movie with Steve Martin and my children.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
That went right over my head. Yeah. So the jokes from that movie went over their heads. That joke went over my head. But they've been running around going da-dun, 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 nonstop since watching the movie.
Nice.
So the question, sometimes a game's score or a movie's score can get stuck in our heads, and sometimes it's a single sound effect. What noise or sound cue from a game elicits a Pavlovian response from you?
I'll get us started here with Patrick, who says, the Final Fantasy victory sound. It always gives me the feeling something good happened, and it has become one of those things you can hum easily too. Oh yeah. No, just the number of things here that that are just like, oh yeah, I had a ringtone of that.
Mm-hmm. So is this the da-na-na-na-na-na-na?
Yeah. Yeah, that little,
okay,
that
just
little
making sure there. I'm thinking the right thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, let's see here. David, what does Brian say?
Brian says, the Dark Souls invasion sound immediately raises my hackles every time.
Yeah. I was about to say what David says here. So, Ben, what does David say?
David says, the little tone that sounds in Dark Souls when you enter a new area and the area name pops up on the screen. Just fantastic. Lets you know to be on your guard.
Yeah. Yeah, I bunch those because those are both pretty similar. Like both of them are kind of like really subtle, almost like beds or washes that come up. But like they you immediately have the association with them. I would also throw on there the slight high pitched hum that you hear when you're near a bonfire, like especially if you can't see the bonfire just yet, but you can hear it and you know it's around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
Dennis, what does Steven say?
Steven says, when anyone says, ah, yes, in real life, all I hear is
Socutius? Is how I would say
Socutius Ur'gala from Morrowind.
Yeah. I know what sound that is. I forget what role that character plays.
Hard to pronounce name.
Greg pulls one from the post image here. I was already thinking the Metal Gear alert sound while reading the question before I even saw the picture. So that has got to be my answer. And yes, I was one of those dorks who had that as a text sound before I realized that the codec beep was much more appropriate. Mm-hmm. let's see, David, what does Callum say?
Callum says, the sound of random battle starting in Final Fantasy, particularly the crash sound from 7, immediately makes me feel frustrated for being interrupted.
Yeah, yeah. The one from FF4 where it's like, roop, roop, roop. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I don't remember from Final Fantasy. I do remember them from Dragon Warrior.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the 7 one was really jarring because it was like a white noise, like psh, and like they did this like little smearing screen filter kind of thing as they transitioned in. The only thing that saved it was that the battle music was generally really good.
Yeah, well, that's something.
Yeah. Let's see, Dennis, what does Stephanie say? I've got the rotation all messed up, don't worry.
Okay. Stephanie says, the sound of a flag getting capped in the Arathi Basin in World of Warcraft. Seriously, guys, no one was watching the farm?
No, because everybody's a DPS and they're out there in the middle fucking around. let's see here. Jonathan says, as someone that played engineer in Team Fortress, the sentry trill when it detects someone is always a pleasure. Oh, yeah, especially Team Fortress Classic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a good one. I played a lot of engineer because I was a bad shot. let's see, David, what does Ollie say?
Jonathan says, the whining squeal of the hinges when opening metal doors or fences in the original Resident Evil games. It's a stock sound that I've heard in other media, and it always stands out.
Yeah. Satisfying. Especially that little, like the little hit at the end, regardless of what the animation does, kind of makes it sound like it's rattling a little bit. On the frame, it's good. Dennis, what does Owen say?
Owen says that juicy loot drop sound in Diablo 2.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what?
I just made a juicy sound. I can't remember exactly what it sounded like. That's made a juicy
sound.
The one
I remember is for a lot of the weapons, they would kind of flip up in the air and make a before they land sound.
Yeah. No, I just took a guess because they said juicy. So Nicholas says the hostile ship alert noise from Escape Velocity is the same stock sound as the order alert at McDonald's. I go for some cheeky fast food and have to watch out for pirate corvettes. I've never played Escape Velocity. There's some gas stations. It's always gas stations. Their registers or their credit card machine, like confirmation noise, is exactly the sonic you just picked up a ring sound effect.
Oh, refresh the page. I just added all the responses from the Slack, and that's in there.
It is. Okay, cool. Thank you. Yeah. So I will refresh the page here and get back to this. But yeah, sorry. Oops, I refreshed and now I am lost. So,
let's, yeah, stock sounds. Excellent.
Stock sounds. Yeah. Let's see. David, what does Elliot say?
Elliot says pretty much any sound from Half-Life.
Yeah. The boop, boop.
So I never played Half-Life. I played Half-Life 2, and definitely ones that stand out for me at least are the turret sees you sound and the like you need to reload sound, both very solid.
Yeah. A lot of the sound effects are the come over from 1 and 2.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So they'll be familiar. They're just different higher resolution versions of the sounds. Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, the grab a coin sound from Mario gives my brain a small dopamine hit whenever I hear it. New Super Mario Brothers 2 damn near made me overdose.
Yeah, that's a game of picking up millions and millions of coins. Let's see. Dennis, what does Phil say?
Phil, when I asked the question, asked back, aside from hearing the sonic ring at a convenience store?
Yep. It's crazy. Like, I remark about that, like, to the clerk. I say, that would drive me crazy. That's the sonic. It's a sonic sound. And they don't react. Because it's a
kid. This is a convenience store, not a fast food restaurant.
Yeah, not a drive-in. Yeah, and also, like, you know, they're paid to process my transaction, not deal with my bullshit. Yeah. So, let's see. Alex says, "Run, coward!" I believe referring to Sinistar, possibly.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
There was quite the discussion on Sinistar that apparently has a lot of legendary stings in it.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't the first arcade game to have like voice stuff. I know Berserk predates that. But yeah, it had many loud barks that would call out and made it very memorable. Yeah. And then let's round it out here. David, what does Case say?
He says, "I think for me, it's the sound effects from Super Mario World."
Yeah, from Super Mario World specifically, the when you end a stage. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love sound effects. Good sound design is necessary. For me, it will be like the menu navigation sounds from earlier Resident Evil games and Silent Hill. Like Resident Evil 2, like that very particular, like, warm analog boop 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 that you get when you mouse around in your little interface there, like, to the point where when they added the throwback soundtrack onto the Resident Evil 2 remake, I could take or leave the music in RE2, honestly, outside of a couple of particular tracks. The thing that made me most happy to have that on was the sound effects in the menu. Love those things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David, how about you?
I think for me, it's got to be the Winter Lantern song from Bloodborne.
Yeah. That's a good one. Just that like muffled lullaby kind of sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I'm going to have to look that up. I'm going to go with a semi-non-traditional answer. I'm going to say the sound effects in The Witness, like when you frame up on something, when mm-hmm. you abort, when you get a successful or wrong answer. Yeah. Like, I think it has really good, memorable sound effects, at least that I can hear in my mind.
It does. It does, yeah. I'm gonna
require you to do a rendition of those, Ben.
I cannot audibly recreate them.
They're really subtle. Like the one that is like that has like the most tone to it would be the like you have screwed up and the answer is rejected, and also this one gets gets powered down. It all of the sound work in that game does a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Dennis.
Yeah, best one in recent memory for me is the little ding at the end of a room in Hades that tells you there's a fishing point.
Ooh.
You get through a crazy intense battle, you know, barely escape, or, you know, everything is bullet hell, and then ding, fish.
you get to wrangle up some angling, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah, I like this question. This is good, and I love sound design. Especially in video games. So mm-hmm. good job, Dennis. Good job, everybody, with your answers. Some nice non-standard stuff in there too. I have no idea. I've never even played Escape Velocity.
Excellent polls all around.
Yeah. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Dennis, for posting, and thank you everybody for responding.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Ben, follow up from last week.
Did we talk about this last week? I cannot remember.
It was like a little sting at the end. It was kind of brought up as like a, hey, this kind of, I think it was posted while we were recording and we're like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for some reason I couldn't remember if we covered it or not, but basically the makers of Fortnite released a new game mode called Imposters, which is pretty much a carbon copy of Among Us. It's just using their engine and their world and everything. Mm-hmm. But the idea is you're a bunch of people on a, I think, an airship, but I'm not sure. And you're doing like mundane tasks to keep everything going. And then there's a few people who are trying to sabotage things. Yeah. And there's rooms where you can like accuse one another, that sort of thing. So there are two articles I saw about it. One was the trailer that they released about this. The other article I saw was like quotes from the Among Us developers, which was like a big downer because there's talking about like, they could have just reached out to us and we would have like worked with them. That would have been so cool.
Yeah.
And then it's like, but no, that's not happening.
Right.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the lame part is that it's like, and this kind of happened too with like PUBG when it came out, is that was like lightning. And I guess that's what Fortnite is, where it's like, you know, it was an original game when it first came out. And then there were just so many clones of it. Yeah.
Specifically with PUBG and Fortnite, like Fortnite came out, nobody really dug it because it was like a Minecraft kind of thing. And then PUBG came and was popular. And then they're like, oh, well, let's add a battle royale mode. And that's when Fortnite started taking off. Like there's a tremendous amount of bad blood around that.
Didn't PUBG like sue them too? This is so long ago that I forget these news stories.
I think, but I don't know if the suit went forward or if it's still in, you know, because court system takes forever, you know?
So I had forgotten about that detail. So I guess this is like in their wheelhouse to do this. Just be like, oh, hey, this game's popular. Let's make a move for it.
It's not really good behavior.
Go ahead.
No, it's not really good behavior, especially when like the Among Us people are like, oh, it would have been super cool to work with you guys. We could, you know, put Among Us people in there, like two great tastes that taste great together. It'd be good for everybody. But no, they didn't do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, this doesn't really affect me because I don't play Fortnite. So I'm not really. But at the same time, it's just like it's just kind of a bummer of a story. But it's the thing that's coming out. And this is news.
Yeah, I mean. I feel like if we're talking about them ripping off things, isn't the Epic Store just a Steam ripoff?
I don't know. I don't know that Steam has the corner on digital marketplace for video games.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many other things that Fortnite has ripped off, like the
dances.
It was like the week or I mean, 2 weeks after Apex Legends launched, they started. You know, messing around with being able to respawn your teammates. So that's very much their approach. It's interesting to hear kind of the takes on the Among Us developers' reactions. And it's funny just how you hear a different voice in your head when you read stuff online. Like I took it as way more bitter and way less charitable as they were tweeting, which it is way more understandable when a big guy steals from a small guy, right? As much as Among Us can be said to be a small guy, you know, it's still kind of a small team. But, you know, I think especially with something like this, a rising tide raises all ships. I looked at the Steam charts numbers for Among Us over the past couple of days since Imposters has been out. They're fine. Like this has not hit them in any kind of negative way. So while, yes, the idea of like, hey, maybe Epic could have partnered with us or at least given us a heads up or whatever. I know that Among Us team is already like strained to the breaking point for capacity regardless. So the idea they'd be able to, I don't know, do something else just for Fortnite, especially if it wasn't a paid promotion is kind of ridiculous. And at that point, it's like, okay, so what I read into it is like they're mad they couldn't find a way to get paid for what Fortnite was doing.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but I think that's justified, though.
Yeah.
It's like you're making a clone. Like, well,
you can't patent game mechanics. And if you start trying to, it gets really skeezy really fast. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
again, it's a small guy. So I understand the sentiment, but like they're going to be fine. And Fortnite's going to do this thing for a week or however long. And
then, it'll pass.
Know, pirate or take something else. I think I would have loved to see them be cheeky about it rather than despondent about it.
Well, the thing that's like bothersome though is like how much of a copy it is, right? Where it's like it's not like innovating on the mechanics at all, right? And so like that's the piece that I think is bad is that it's like the people who make Fortnite are not like innovating at all. They're taking an idea that somebody else had and then profiting off of it because they already have a larger audience.
Yeah.
Yes, but I would argue that they're not doing that. That is going to have no negative ramifications for Among Us. In fact, it might bring more people to Among Us.
Yeah.
So in terms of just like the the look is bad, but the effect, like, no harm, no foul, I guess, in my mind. Which, if Among Us goes belly up in the next 2 weeks, you know,
then we know who to blame.
Yeah, but I think they're going to be just fine, if not potentially growing from us. And it feels like the smarter thing for them to do would have been to, like, hey, we got ripped off by Fortnite. That puts us in a new echelon. And that positive spin, I think, would have, they could have, it feels weird to be like, oh, they could have treated this like an opportunity, but kind of, even though it sucks that that Fortnite is doing what Fortnite does, they're doing it to you, which is an endorsement in and of itself.
So let's move on. Speaking of things that are not necessarily innovating very much. Hey, David, what's going on with Skyrim?
Yeah, so Skyrim is copying off of Fortnite by putting zero effort in. They are releasing another re-release of Skyrim. This one's apparently an anniversary edition.
Mm-hmm.
However, it does include fishing.
Hallelujah.
Ding.
It's ripping it off of Hades. This is like a PS5, Xbox Series X. You know, like, this is literally just them doing like a big update for the, you know, 60 frames at 1080 kind of stuff, or 4K kind of stuff. Yeah.
I don't know. That's all I got from it and all it deserves.
Yeah.
I wonder if this will make the VR version of Skyrim even better.
I don't know.
I would love that. Because I spent a significant amount of time on the VR version on PS4. Mm-hmm. It was kind of dark and grainy, which was offset by the coolness of feeling like you're physically in the world. But I imagine with a more powerful system, like, this kind of upgrade applied to VR could be really, really cool.
Yeah.
So now we know what the next edition of Skyrim is going to be.
Maybe Skyrim is ripping off Fortnite by trying to rip off another game, which is also Skyrim, to try and improve both of those games.
I don't know. This isn't about Skyrim, but this is about Grand Theft Auto. But it feels applicable, which is the PS2 gave us 3 Grand Theft Auto games. And then Grand Theft Auto 5 was spread out over 3 different console generations.
Yeah.
That's just weird. It's so weird what has happened to big game development like that.
There was this is maybe a tangent, but there was a Reddit post where it was like up-res graphics of the Grand Theft Auto characters, like trying to hint at like a remaster for the current consoles of like GTA 3, GTA Vice City, and San Andreas. It'd be like, that would be dope. I would. Mm-hmm. They could just carbon copy those games and just update the graphics, and I'd be fine with that.
I think that those have been announced. I think that they're working with somebody to update those to a new engine and re-release them.
Sweet,
yeah,
sweet, sweet.
Yeah.
In fact, that probably says something about how well Skyrim was programmed once upon a time. If it's been adapted this many times and isn't like complete spaghetti code,
yeah. But. Who knows? Yeah, and I've got one. It's kind of like remakes and remasters all around, I suppose. I was surprised to see that a Quake remaster was put out on modern systems. I have it downloaded on my right, like the original Quake. I figured maybe like it hadn't really been re-released. Maybe the soundtrack was encumbered because it was done by Trent Reznor. Like, who knew? But like, no, released and stable on modern systems with like lots of really granular like shader options to do, so you can make it look all smooth and new, or you could like do this procedural down res on it to make it look chunkity like it was before. But yeah, it's like Quake plus a new expansion plus like a better supported multiplayer as well, with crossplay across a bunch of different systems, and it's on Game Pass. Like, sign me up. I like the original Quake rules. So
Quake multiplayer diehards are puking at the idea of this game played with a controller.
Yes. Yeah. but That doesn't hurt them. If anything, it just makes them, it gives them a lot more easy targets. So
we'll see how strong the auto aim is before we comment on that.
What's cool about it is it will support mods. So that's nice. I don't know. I just like that really hit me by surprise that there was like a QuakeCon or something like that, which is neat. Dennis, did you have a story?
Yeah, I posted it a day ago because I stumbled across.
Gotcha.
Which is also about a remake / remaster /
holy shit, we have a theme.
You know, this is such an appropriate time. We can't wait to announce to you now the re-release of The Level, called The Leveler. I'm not going to even try on that one. So yeah, Minecraft Dungeons is going to come to Steam in September. Which made me go, I had no idea it wasn't already on Steam.
Yeah, that was, I don't even know what, I don't think it was Epic. I think it was literally just like Game Pass, or like through the Microsoft storefront, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just Game Pass and then PS5. Mm-hmm. Maybe Switch as well. So yeah, weird that they missed it until now. But good that it's coming out because it is a delightful little game. I've talked about it plenty of times before. And if you're looking for a Diablo feel that you can beat, or kind of get your fill of in a week or so, with the option to keep on playing and seeing cool stuff if you like, Minecraft Dungeons is excellent. Highly recommend.
Yeah.
So, coming out on September 22nd, and is a delightful little game that I'm glad more people will get the chance to play.
Nice. Yeah. You've talked about it on a few different occasions and it sounds like a fun experience.
Yeah, now they just need to add crossplay and the ability to have local players and online players in the same lobby.
Yes.
I don't know why so many games, if you go, you know, local players will restrict you from going into an online lobby. That's infuriating.
No idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much for listening to Level Number 383. We appreciate you taking the time. I'll keep the outro low and slow this week. You know what you can do. You can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You can leave ratings or reviews. You can tell your friends all of that stuff. Is there anything like big I'm forgetting in this?
Don't think so. I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I was starting to do art reveal interviews for Deck of Wonders, and those have started to hit. Mm-hmm. So there's two out now. You can check the Deck of Wonders socials, which I'll mention in a second, to see them. But new card art is coming out, and it's fantastic.
Nice.
So, yes.
Nice. Yeah. Let's get to that. Dennis, where can they find you online?
Oh, no, I'm going first.
Oh, no, like sorry. I wanted the continuity there.
Yeah. Oh, this feels wrong. So you can find me at Deck of Wonders on Instagram or Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words on Twitter. If you want to just go to a website to see everything that's new, you can go to deckofwondersgame.com.
Yeah. I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I'm David Mysmith. You can find me at DragonCon.
Oh, And I've been Ben Merkel.
Yeah, and stick around for some titles. I didn't have any. I was delinquent on that. So I will throw... Dennis, what'd you have?
Yeah, so I've got Here I Go Suffering Again. I also have two that are kind of also rans in my mind, but there's remasters all around, as well as just ding.
Oh, I'm kind of sad that no one went with Remasters of the Universe.
David, what do you have?
I have Hook Socks.
Oh yeah.
Congratulations. That sounds awesome.
that's a
brand. We made that joke last week.
we made that joke last week. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Distance and time compress the tedium.
Okay.
and Cole can't play it. Cole has a problem.
Compress the tedium is pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Ben, did you have anything?
I was also delinquent. I have the page up. I just didn't write.
Yeah. Compress the tedium, I think, would be a good one for that.
That's got my vote.
So, I support that.
Mm-hmm.
Thumbs up.
Cool.
Can I grouse about something before we go?
Please.
Sure, I'll stop the recording.